I offer my humble salutations at the divine lotus feet of our dearest Swami, and I pray to him to guide us through this podcast and guide us on our thoughts, our ideas, and hopefully we all will come out of it with some learning experience.
Sairam, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of SciCast. For those joining in for the first time, I'm your host, Anna Gurevich, and I'm a young adult from Boston, Massachusetts. We're here tonight to sing the sweet name of Sci, talk about issues that matter to our community, and also to remind you to register for and attend the first ever National Sci Women's Conference here in the United States. We'll be gathering in Trenton, New Jersey on June 29th and June 30th for an amazing day and a half of empowerment, inspiration, sisterhood, and growing and learning together in Sci. I'm really excited that joining me today as co-host is Madhuri Manohar, a young adult from Baltimore, Maryland.
Sairam, everyone. Thank you so much, Anna, for giving me this opportunity to co-host this SciCast episode with you. I've been listening to these podcasts and have been loving them so far. To our fellow listeners today, if you've not had a chance to listen, episode one is titled Grace Under Pressure with Sister Geeta Govindrajan, and episode two is titled Inside Out, Spirituality, Service, and the Self with Auntie Sheila Nayak. They can be downloaded from the Sci Women's Conference website and listened to wherever you are and whenever you can. The website is www.satyasai.us/SWC2019. You can find the recordings by clicking on the link Pre-Conference Initiatives and then SciCast. Let's talk about it.
Since this is the first time you're hosting, Madhuri, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Anna. I have been in the Sci fold for as long as I can remember. Swami came into my life as a toddler through my parents, and he has touched our lives, and he continues to touch our lives every single day. By profession, I'm a research scientist at Johns Hopkins at Baltimore. And before coming to Baltimore, I spent almost my entire childhood in Oman, this beautiful and serene country in the Middle East. Apart from work, I love exploring my creative side with some writing, learning the piano, doing some calligraphy, and a couple of things here and there. So that's about me.
Well, Madhuri, I'm really glad you're here with us today. Now let's get to our topic and our special guest. Today's episode is titled, Hear Me Roar, Leaders Like Lions. We're going to explore the topic of leadership, the challenges we face internally and from society, what Swami says about true leadership, and how to practice it. Today, we're so lucky to have with us Dr. Malaika Horn, Director of the Executive Leadership Consortium in the College of Business Administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. One of Dr. Horn's specialties is women in leadership, and she's also a journalist and a longtime Swami devotee.
Well, thank you, Anna and Madhuri, for having me on this podcast, and congratulations on putting on the first Sci Women's Conference, and I hope that the group has many, many, many more.
Dr. Horn, to get us started, would you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I was born and raised in St. Louis, and I've lived mostly in St. Louis, 1 year in Europe, but I've traveled quite extensively. And I guess my hobby is traveling and reading and art. I'm married. I guess I better mention my husband. He's a college professor at Southern Illinois University.
Thank you, Dr. Horn. Something I like asking someone the first time I meet them who's a Sai devotee is, what drew you to Swami? There's always so many fascinating stories, and today I would like to hear your story.
Well, living in St. Louis, I wasn't aware of any activity here. But my boss at the time, because before I was in academia, I managed a drug treatment center, and Dr. William Harvey was the executive director. In fact, he is the one that informed me about Sai Baba. And right now, he's on the Prashanti Council. He's a member. And so he's been a very abiding and steadfast member of the Sai Baba organization, as well as Jack Seeley, who was my counterpart in the second drug treatment center that we had in St. Louis, in suburbs of St. Louis, and we were in the city. But Dr. Harvey went to a conference, a spiritual conference in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, where he's from. And he found out the person who was presenting said that the most spiritual person on the planet was Sai Baba, and that's what piqued his interest. And he finally, he found a center in San Francisco where he traveled to a lot. And then eventually we found out there was a center in St. Louis. And what I found appealing after reading about him and going to the St. Louis Center was his work in service, in terms of feeding the hungry and servicing the poor, and his focus on education, free education, then of course eventually the super specialty hospital. And so that's what drew me to Swami, along with his teachings, which are amazing. And so they've been so helpful to me. Since 1981, I've been a devotee, and I've been following him ever since.
Wow, that's a really incredible story of how you came to Swami. It must have been interesting to be there so early on and see, you know, see Swami like back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So you've served on the boards of many organizations, and you've been involved in putting together leadership and mentorship programs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the role of leadership in today's society, and why is this important to you?
Well, as you mentioned, I've served on a number of boards, so I've gotten a chance to see some of the best leaders and some of the not so good leaders. So I've learned a lot from just observing other people. And then when I had a chance to establish the Executive Leadership Consortium at the University of Missouri St. Louis, one of the books that I first read was the one by Lieutenant General Chipper. And that really, really was the foundation, along with my academic preparation for leadership, because I did take a course when I was in graduate school, when part of that course was on leadership. But I had no idea I would actually be having a program on this. But I think everybody should be a leader. And Swami even says this, no matter how big or how small, you should take responsibility for making a contribution to your home and to your state and to your country, to your nation, and to the world. And if everybody did that, I think we would have a better society, a better world.
It's very interesting, Dr. Horn, that you brought up the topic of Lieutenant Chibber's book titled Sai Baba's Mahavakya on Leadership. In fact, I was fortunate to be a graduate of the Sri Sathya Sai International Youth Leadership Program in 2016. And this was one of the books that they had recommended for study to all of us. And I also encourage our listeners that if they haven't, to give this book some thought. And speaking of the book, I remember him mentioning that good and effective leadership is a person whose thoughts, words, and deeds are in harmony. There is no duplicity. Good and effective leaders say what they think and do what they say. So, Dr. Horn, I wanted to ask you, what is your perspective, particularly on women leaders in society, where they may be facing difficult challenges, not only the task at hand, but also women? And if you could comment something about the barriers that we as women put on ourselves, as well as barriers on society, that would be great.
Well, when, you know, leadership, like any other image, is a picture in your head. And when you think about leaders, normally people think about men, men as leaders. Even if you think about, if someone asks you, name a leader in a particular profession, you would be hard-pressed to name women because for various reasons, women are not usually leaders. They're usually the members. Now, one of the things that I know, and it's even mentioned in Swami's teaching, is followers make the best leaders. But then those best followers should be recognized and promoted and given the opportunity to make a contribution, because we have many, many talented women who are not given that opportunity. And so many women need to be recognized more and supported more and challenged more to be in their rightful positions. And so I think as the title of this program talks about, women and lions and having courage and having all kinds of competencies like self-reliance and being majestic and thinking about, it's our responsibility too to protect the world. And we have to support each other, and women have to support women, and men have to support women.
Thank you, Dr. Horn. So you mentioned women having qualities like courage, self-reliance, and exhibiting qualities that make us like lions in leadership. Are there any other unique qualities that you see in women that helps them act as leaders, whether it's as a follower within their community or as a leader who is objectively in a position in a hierarchy or at the front of a group?
Well, studies show that women tend to be more collaborative. And so they interact more closely with their members or with the participants or whoever they're serving. And so that's one point that needs to be brought out, and that's a more modern competencies for leadership, because hierarchies are becoming more flat, and so it's more important to influence rather than have power. So women tend to be more bottom up than top down. Men, the traditional male leadership, even though it's changing, tends to be more top down, and so the tendency is to deliver edicts or orders or directives from on high, and then it's filtered down through selected layers of actors until it reaches the bottom. But nowadays, a more modern way of leadership is to start at the bottom and influence the members, so you would have an organic kind of spreading of the behavior, of the messages from the bottom up, the top down, and from the middle up and the middle down. So it's a different way of approaching leadership, and women tend to be naturally predisposed to that type of leadership.
I wonder though, Dr. Horn, whether it's like a chicken or egg problem, where if women are naturally predisposed to have some of those characteristics, whether it's a result of social history of women maybe needing a little bit more like validation or having to rely on other people for power and for support, as opposed to being able to do things on their own. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, there's two schools of thought with many of these behaviors, and it's nature and nurture. So, you know, you may be more naturally predisposed. There's nothing wrong with that. But then the nurture, the environment, and as you were talking about, the socialization, the acculturation, the kind of messages that we receive as girls, as women, about where we're supposed to be in society. And as I said earlier, most leaders are men. Now, why is that? That's because the society has an expectation for boys and for men to lead. But now what we need to do is really encourage and promote women who have many, many talents and can make all kinds of contributions to also lead, to also push forward, and to understand that they should have the confidence. And the confidence comes from within, but also it comes from without, from outside. So, you know, you have to have both. So it's my responsibility to have confidence, but I would encourage the people around me to also give me support and to help me if they see something in me that deserves recognition.
You touched upon a very good point there, Dr. Horn, about support. And when I think of the word support, the first person I remember is my mother, because she's a constant source of support to me. And even right before this podcast, I was just talking to her about my week, and it gave me a lot of confidence after talking to her. And I recently found out that you wrote a book about motherhood called Mother Wit, Exalting Motherhood While Honoring a Great Mother. Can you tell us about your reason for writing the book and what you wanted to convey to readers?
Well, as a feminist, or as Alice Walker, the renowned African-American writer, author, she calls it womanist. So either way, as a womanist or a feminist, I believe in supporting women. Now, a lot of times, women leaders and men may not look at the role of mothers in terms of their role in nurturing and rearing young girls and young boys to be leaders. But I think the seed is planted in the home with the mother and the father. But traditionally, the mother has had the main responsibility of raising or rearing the child. And so that sacrifice and that love and that intellectual and spiritual development primarily comes from the mother. And there's nothing like a mother's love. So if you have love along with encouragement, along with your intellectual development and your spiritual development, the chances of you being a whole, healthy, spiritualized person making tremendous contributions to the world are greatly enhanced. And I just wanted to let people know that people don't become leaders, you know, once they become an adult. This is something that happens throughout your life. And the people that start you off on this path, now there are many other people like teachers and preachers and other authority figures, but the one who gets you started, and as you said about your mother, just talking to you on the phone, and the one that stays with you her entire life is your mother.
So that is actually a good segue to my next question that I wanted to ask you, that do people need to be in a position of power or high up in some hierarchy in order to be a good leader?
Well, nowadays in the leadership literature, they kind of disparage power, and they really lean more toward influence. And that means that in order to influence, then you have to have a closer relationship with your members. You have to be able to be a good communicator. You know, as they talked about, a good and effective leader. Good, effective leader has many, many attributes. Like a professional athlete. A professional athlete has to do many things well. So is a professional leader. And so it's not necessarily the person. Of course, the person at the top plays a very important role. But you have to have leaders throughout the ranks in order to achieve a goal. So you can't just have one person. Like a king or a queen, that's basically obsolete, as you know. You have to have people throughout the ranks who are in the pipeline, who are moving forward and being recognized and supported to eventually get to the top or near the top.
Dr. Horn, you bring up a really nice point And Swami has also said that we can be successful leaders only for disciplined followers who set an example of service in our actions. And you mentioned this before when you said that followers make the best leaders. What are your thoughts on service generally and leadership and how those go together?
Well, all leaders should be servants, and they should be servants first because they have to have a good grasp of who they're serving. You really have to know your audience or your participants or your followers, whoever you're trying to reach, whoever you're trying to target. You have to know, you have to listen to them. You have to know what they want. You have to know what they need. And then you deliver that and you work with them. You just don't give them something. You empower them. You give them a voice. You help them to get on their feet. And then you spin off and go into another group. You can't feel sorry for them and you can't feel or think that they're helpless. You just understand that they reached a bad patch and there's some barriers they need to overcome. And then you need to communicate to them what you know about what it takes in order to overcome these challenges, to overcome these barriers. So it's really, leadership is interactive. It's more than just someone on high delivering edicts. That's a very old-fashioned, obsolete. And even when they had that type of leadership, it probably wasn't that effective.
So one good point that you brought up, Dr. Horn, that leads me to my next question is, Dr. Chibber asserts that the foundation of leadership is vision. And you spoke about how it's not enough to have one leader on the top, but have several leaders in the whole pipeline of a team. And it really helps when we have one leader with a specific vision. And going on to say that the higher the vision, there's higher degree of selflessness. So would you mind commenting something on that?
Well, an effective leader, a good leader, will be able to deliver that message throughout the rank and file, from the top to the bottom and bottom to the top. And then that leader, even though the leader has a vision and the leader is unselfish or has selflessness, they should be able to listen to what other people think that are part of their team, as you call it, and maybe revise it. So it's not just one person having a vision, even though that vision is important. But as you know, we all change as we get older and wiser and more knowledgeable. And a leader continues to grow. As you talked about earlier, about growing and learning together, the leader is learning with everybody else. And the leader is growing and learning with everybody else.
So Dr. Horn, we've been talking a lot about leadership within a defined structure. But what about, so Swami also says that a true leader is one who has harmony in thought, word, and deed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone is not necessarily in a structure where they're striving to move ahead or up a ladder or to reach a certain goal, how can we exemplify leadership on a day-to-day basis in whatever situation we're in?
Well, regardless of the term leadership or not, we should want to do what we're doing well. We should have a passion for excellence. Regardless of you're dealing with a leader or if you're dealing with a colleague, if you have thought, word, and deed, then you will be able to communicate to them what you are trying to accomplish. And as Swami and Dr. Chipper talks about, you will, the other people in your environment, on your team or in your group, will trust you more. If you have duplicity, then it's going to be difficult for them to understand what you're attempting to do because there's a phrase, talking out of both sides of your mouth. You have to talk straight. You have to behave in a certain, you have to think a certain kind of way, you have to talk a certain kind of way, and you have to behave a certain kind of way, all consistent, all going in one direction. Because it's a team, and it's like a machine. There's different parts, and all these parts have to work together because you're trying to reach this ideal, this vision. You're trying to reach a goal, and everybody's in this together, working together, cooperating together, collaborating together. In order to do that, you have to have harmony of thought, word, and deed, or else you probably won't be able to reach your goal.
Dr. Horn, you spoke a lot about a lot of key qualities necessary for leadership, such as having trustworthiness, having unity in thought, word, and deed. What are some of the other key qualities that you think are necessary for leaders? And also, how does emotional intelligence play a key role in leadership?
Well, one of my favorite competencies right now, because there are many competencies that the research has shown that will help develop into being a good leader. Emotional intelligence is one of them. But as we've been talking about, being a good communicator, understanding how to reach a goal, ethics, character, understanding finance, those financial literature, and on, how to gain access to opportunities. But right now, I've been intrigued with emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence, I think, is a sub-value, probably, truth and all the other five values of nonviolence and love and peace and dharma, right conduct. But I think the essence of it is compassion and empathy. If you have compassion and empathy, which is emotional intelligence, for your team, for the members that you're trying to serve, then you will more than likely be successful. And it's also akin to not being selfish. As I've said many times, a leader who is self-centered is not a leader, because that person is thinking primarily of himself or herself. And so you have to go beyond yourself and sacrifice and think about your vision, what you're attempting to do to serve humanity, to serve a cause.
That's a really beautiful point. And one question that comes from that is, in addition to sacrifice, service, emotional intelligence, love, character, all of these qualities that make a good leader, what would you say is the place for self-confidence also? And Swami has said that leadership comes from self-confidence, which is faith in the self. Or if we go more deep into the Atma principle with self with a capital S. Could you talk about the place of self-confidence in building leadership qualities?
Well, most likely, if you become a leader at the top, one of the things that has guided you or propelled you through all the different challenges and opportunities is self-confidence. It starts with self-confidence. You have to believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, then you can influence other people to believe in you, although you do need to surround yourself with good company who will give you positive vibes and positive messages. But at the end of the day, if you don't have self-confidence, then even people around you won't be able to help you. You have to believe in yourself. And once you do that, and you have to have courage, you have to say, I can do this. Now you have to prepare, but you have to know yourself. Having self-confidence is knowing what your strengths are, what you need strengthening in, where is your passion. And if you know this about yourself, you will set out with all of this in mind, and you will be able to achieve And the more you achieve and the more you practice these important principles of achieving, you will become even more confident. And people will see that. And you will see it in yourself. And so it starts with self-confidence. It has to start with self.
So Dr. Horn, coming back to the theme for today, which is women and leadership, what is the status of women's role in society today?
Well, as you know, in the United States, next year, 2020, is 100 years of women's suffrage. So it hasn't been that long when women got the right to vote, in other words. It hasn't been that long that women had sufficient freedom and opportunities to move freely in the society. And so we have a long way to go. We've been held back because of gender bias. And so as a group, we need to continue with our allies, with our male allies, to move these barriers aside. So women with talent and with aspirations can make a contribution, can help themselves and help others. And so the status of women, we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. If you think about the Fortune 500, I think right now it's less than 5% of women are CEOs of those 500 top companies in the United States. Virtually every institution in the United States is not headed by a woman. So we need more women, as I've mentioned before, throughout the ranks, but more women to be leaders.
When you're working with women in your community and trying to impart, you know, the confidence and the courage in people to be leaders, what is your strategy for this? How do you translate these concepts into action items or tools and tips that you give to people who are learning from you?
Well, the first thing I want to do is build trust and rapport. And I want to listen to them. I want to learn from them. I want to know about their aspirations and their hopes and their dreams and their fears. And after a trust and rapport is established, then I will give them my perspective and then train them. And I want to spend a lot of time closely interacting with them and then observing them to see if they're able to follow through on certain tasks and certain responsibilities. And as they're able to accomplish those tasks, then I will ratchet it up a little bit more and a little bit more. I usually tell people who I'm training, I'll know when you've been trained when you come back and tell me something I've forgotten. So we are learning and growing together and trying to be partners and working with something. I do understand that as their leader or their supervisor or their boss, that I have a role to play in the table of organization. But at the same time, I want to narrow that as much as I can so that we can connect and be partners and learn and look through the lens of this experience in a way where there's some overlap, where we have something in common and we know what each is experiencing and trying to achieve.
That's such a beautiful point, that the whole experience is very much a collaborative and, you know, effort to build people up and have it be a growing and learning experience for everyone. And that ties in really nicely to this idea of, you know, that leadership is really just inspiring others to be better and to see the potential and the spark within everyone that allows them to do great things. Do you have any women role models that that inspired you in this way?
Well, you can have role models who you've read about, but the most important are the role models that you can have face-to-face interactions with. I do remember when I read the Ramayana, Sita became my role model. And what I liked about her was her loyalty and her steadfastness. And I really was able to imbibe that and instill that and help me to understand how important it is to be loyal, not only to a cause, but to the individuals who are part of that. Other role models, I remember reading about Ida B. Wells Barnett, who helped form the NAACP. She was a writer and a journalist and an activist. And she was also an opponent of lynching. So right after the Civil War, there were a lot of lynchings of African Americans. And she went, and she was very, very brave, more brave than some of the men in her groups. And she went all around the country and all around the world. So the reason why one of the main women, the main person that helped to have a decline in that horrible practice was a woman, Ida B. Wells Barnett. Other women, there's a woman in St. Louis who really was kind to me. And once she learned me, she had all this social influence. And she put me on all these different boards and made sure I got all kinds of awards. So you can have people who have social influence. You can have people who have economic influence. You can have people who have organizational influence. There's all kinds of mentors that you can have, men and women. And I've had male mentors like Dr. William Harvey. And then there was a state senator, Senator John Bass, who was very influential. So you can have political mentors who made sure I got a big political appointment. So there are all kinds of mentors that you can have.
That's so beautifully put, Dr. Hahn. In fact, as you were talking, I was just thinking of all the female role models and mentors I've had. And on a day-to-day basis, I have my colleagues, I have my Sai sisters at the Sai Center, mm-hmm. and I have my mother as a role model, and several other leaders whom I've read about or heard on TV. So mm-hmm. one of the things I wanted to ask you is, leadership is an ongoing learning lesson for all of us. So could you tell us about a time when you realized something about leadership that you didn't expect?
Well, when I was working on my bachelor's, which was organizational sociology, I really got intrigued by this one book. I think it was called The Organizational Man by White. I think it was W-H-Y-T-E. And so when I was in college, I said, when I become a professional, I want to be an organizational person. So my first, leadership kind of management role, I decided to be the ideal. But I found out other people didn't go by the book always. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. It depended. I thought you were supposed to go by the book all the time. And so that was a big surprise for me. And so I had to learn the art of compromise and encouragement and influence, because if people had gotten together and put together policies and procedures, the rule book, they did that for a reason. They did that because they knew it would help the organization be more successful. And so when people would, disregard the rules because it was inconvenient, that was a surprise.
A follow-up question from that, Dr. Horn, is, and you mentioned disregarding the rules. What do you think the place is for people who have vision for things that maybe don't exist yet, or to push the boundaries and pushing other people along with you? All of the social change that we've had in the last 100 years, you mentioned that we're coming up on 100 years of women's suffrage. That only exists because people really stepped up and had loud voices and encouraged people to listen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to be very patient, and you have to sacrifice. You have to have self-sacrifice. And you have to be a good communicator. You have to be knowledgeable. You have to be able to persuade and influence people based on facts, based on the consequences of not allowing women the right to vote or not giving African Americans their civil rights, that it's a disservice to the individuals, to those people, but also to the country. And you have what they call transformational leaders, like Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Everybody knows him. There are other transformational leaders who were able to influence the masses and spread information in a way to make phenomenal changes in society. That's extremely hard to do. And, of course, he lost his wife as a result. But he even said that a long life was not important to him. He wanted to live a long life like everybody else. But he had a dream. He had a vision. And he was willing to sacrifice in order to have that. That's an exceptional human being. And so a transformational leader with a vision who's able to sacrifice themselves to that degree is far and few between.
Hey, you mentioned this idea of sacrifice, and I know we touched on this a few times already, sacrifice and service and helping and leading in the capacity that you are in. Because we wanted to bring it back a little bit to the idea that people can be leaders in whatever capacity they are. I mean, if people aren't necessarily in the political sphere or the corporate sphere, mm-hmm. people can exemplify these qualities of leadership wherever they are, and they can inspire others to be leaders. But as Swami says, leadership is about confidence in the self and then having harmony in thought, word, and deed, and in that way inspiring and influencing others around you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think you have to deal, and there's a term in cultural diversity called difficult dialogues. You have to spend time. Now, I have someone, a colleague who's also a site devotee, particularly in education, human and values, Doris Hampton. And so we spend a lot of time talking and working through some of these difficult and challenging concepts and how we should behave and what we need to do and how to be on a spiritual path, regardless of how difficult and how painful it can be sometimes. So I think the first thing to do is be in the company of the good and have dialogue and discussions and conversations about this to fortify yourself as you go out here into the world. Because it can be challenging. In fact, I'll say it's very challenging. The more you do it, the more wise you become. I think my definition of wisdom is knowledge plus experience. You have to challenge yourself. You have to push yourself. You got to push the envelope. And then you got to go, you got to have somebody to talk to or a group to talk to or somebody to, because you cannot, as far as I am concerned, you cannot do this alone.
Dr. Horn, not to catch you off guard, but you spoke a lot about having an internal dialogue and always trying to stay on the spiritual path. Would you remember any specific examples, if you're okay with sharing it, where you were in a dilemma and how you internalize the problem at hand and if it had any conflicts with your own belief and how did you come to a resolution with it?
Oh, we could spend all day talking about those kind of things. You know, I have to learn myself. I know that I have a temper and so I have to be, and I know that I'm very opinionated. And so I have to be very careful to not go there because I may lose my audience. I may lose the person or the people I'm trying to influence. That takes a lot of restraint. That takes a lot of sacrifice. But you got to know yourself. And I think that's the most important thing. If you know what you need strengthening in, then that's what you need to work on. And just keep practicing and practicing and practicing until it becomes very, very faint. And I think over the years, I've gotten better and better because I have a tendency to say what I think, and sometimes it's not pleasant. And so I've had to learn to speak in softer, sweeter terms.
Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Hahn. In fact, last weekend, most of us in the United States, we were at a Sai retreat over Memorial Day weekend, and you spoke about how this whole experience in life was allowed you to speak your mind, which is one of the ideal qualities of a leader, but also to speak it very softly and kindly to all. And it just reminded me of one of the workshops from the retreat that was titled on Swami's quote, which is, you cannot always oblige, but you can speak obligingly.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Horn, I understand you're also a member of the Committee on Cultural Inclusion and Expansion in the Sai organization. Can you tell us a little bit about what that committee is and what it intends to accomplish?
Okay, cultural inclusion and expansion is really a term that we borrow from Sai Baba. He used that term because it used to be called cultural sensitivity, but now we're calling it cultural inclusion and expansion. And it includes many Sai Baba devotees all around the country who are addressing the concerns that have been brought up by many people about the declining membership in some centers. Some centers are doing well, but other centers, the membership is declining. And that's a phenomenon that's occurring in religious or spiritual organizations all around the country, particularly young people who may not find it something that they can relate to, whether it's the rituals or it's just the Indian slant that it tends to have. So not only are we want to increase the number of new younger people, we also, the parents are also concerned about their children one day dropping out and not attending as young adults and adults in the Sai organization. In addition to that, there are members of different ethnic groups who may find it and have said they have found it culturally alienating. They don't understand some of the practices of what goes on in the center, although they love the teaching. It's not the teaching so much. That's what attracts most people, like me, to the teachings and the service. And so what we're encouraging centers to do is to be more mindful of some of the practices that may not be conducive to growing the membership among young people, among the children of the parents who are devotees, and among Americans of different ethnic groups. So we can have centers that look like the people who live in the United States.
And I think this ties in really, really nicely to the topic that we've been talking about today, which is leadership, because this really is about continuing to be aware and mindful of the people around us and sort of the changing social dynamic and changing environment and continuing to grow and push ourselves maybe a little bit out, you know, to try new things and to get a little bit out of our comfort zone. I don't know whether it's so much about getting out of our comfort zone. It's because for other people, it's trying to get more into their comfort zone.
But they do say change is getting outside your comfort zone, feeling comfortable with being uncomfortable. For example, with me being a minority, I'm uncomfortable a lot. So I've just become comfortable with being uncomfortable. So when I go into a situation that is different, I just adapt. I've learned to adapt. And so we all have to learn to adapt. The other thing I wanted to mention is that it's important for women within the Sai organization to be leaders. So we need to really cultivate and encourage women to take on more leadership roles within the center. I think that would attract more women to the center if they came to the center and they saw women as leaders as well as men as leaders.
Right, and that actually brings up something that I was hoping to be able to mention on the podcast, but it didn't seem to fit anywhere until now. I'm really excited that in the planning for the PSY Women's Conference, we're really involving women in all of the different aspects of planning the conference. I mean, obviously there's the planning team and all of the logistics and registration and everything that goes along with that. But even things that are like in the PSY Center space tend to be mostly taken care of by men. For example, like the sound system, we have a few women who are experts in sound and in audio science who have volunteered to take on the sound system and even to play percussion instruments. I mean, it's really amazing how much talent and how much ability there is. And it's really just giving people an opportunity to share that.
That's great. That's the vision.
And that actually reminded me of something we spoke last week, the three of us, and it would be interesting to share with the audience that you had mentioned that change is all about getting uncomfortable and getting out of the comfort zone. And if we just think about women for a second, like women are usually more open to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from all the different roles that we play. Like first, we're a student and we're someone's daughter. Then we become someone's wife and mother, right. And we're an employee. Sometimes we are a boss. So that's something that I found unique with women that, as you mentioned earlier, like we're more collaborative, but also mm-hmm. we're very open to change and ideas of everyone.
Absolutely true. And I think because women have been serving for so long, and we understand that you have to adapt in order to serve.
Right. It comes back to the very first point that you mentioned on this podcast, that good followers make great leaders.
Absolutely.
This is the topic of leadership is such a big topic, especially when you approach it from a practical, in the world angle, and then also if you're thinking about it from a spiritual sort of self-awareness aspect. But as we're coming up to the time, I think almost an hour, Dr. Horn, do you have anything in particular that you've learned over your journey that you'd like to share that we haven't necessarily asked about, or anything specific about leadership, developing it, practicing it, and maintaining that sort of inner dialogue that you'd like to share?
Well, the only thing I can think about is constant integrated awareness. When you set off on this journey, you have to be a keen observer, a good listener, and ask good questions of credible people. So you have to have mentors. You have to be able to identify effective leaders and cultivate relationships with those effective leaders and with your peers, with your cohorts who also have the passion to lead and a passion for excellence. So all of these things are important. It's really a lifelong enterprise, a lifelong journey. And the more you practice it, the better you'll become. No great leader just woke up one day and was a great leader. This is something that happens over many, many years and many, many decades. And it's full of trials and tribulations, as they say. There are many lows. There are very few highs, but if you have the determination and the grit and the courage to reach your goal, you will get there.
Thank you so much, Dr. Horn. I think you've really summarized so many of these really beautiful concepts that we can take home with us and practice going forward. I know I really enjoyed this conversation. Leadership, especially as a young adult, is something that I think about a lot, as you know, I and other people and sort of my demographic are, you know, just entering the workforce and struggling with this idea of pushing ourselves and focusing on this more external aspect of leadership, but then also trying to stay connected to Swami and to who we are and really bringing out the best in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that we had the chance today to talk to you.
Adding to what Anna had to say, I really feel I got a lot out of it, and I hope our listeners did too. And some of the things that I think I will take home today are followers make great leaders, and there's just no one leader at the top. There's many leaders throughout the pipeline, all working towards one single vision and having a passion for excellence. And something that you also spoke about that got to me was emotional intelligence, which is having compassion and empathy for your team and also for the cause in hand. And that makes a very successful leader. And as Anna said, as a young adult, we're always in several dilemmas, and we constantly have to keep Swami as our center focus. And a couple of learnings that we got from you today and from others, and having good mentors. So thank you so much, Dr. Horn, for spending this time with us today. I think both me and Anna, as well as our listeners, had many, many themes that you spoke about that resonated with us today.
Well, thank you. And I feel that we're so fortunate to know of Sai Baba and his teachings and his wonderful service, and the fact that with so many people around the world following his teachings and practicing his teachings, that one day we will be able to transform the world.
Thank you so much, Dr. Horn.
You're welcome.
For those of you listening in right now, please tune into the next and last podcast in the series, which will be on Tuesday, June 18th at the same time. We hope you have been enjoying this series and hearing from the incredible and so inspiring women who have been our guests. As we mentioned earlier, the recording and the study circle material of the previous SciCast are available online at www.sepiasci.us/SWC 2019, and just click through for the pre-conference initiative. We've posted the study circle material for this podcast on there as well, and there are a few really, really amazing real-life scenarios and questions there for food for thought. Finally, the National Sci Women's Conference is almost here. There's such an exciting lineup of speakers, workshops, and also a really cool cultural program that is being planned to showcase the talents of the women in our community. It's going to be such a really unique and special experience to see all of the lights of love coming together to shine brighter in Sci. The last day of registration is June 10th, and all of the information is online at www.sepiasci.us/SWC 2019. It's a really simple process to register, so we really encourage anyone who's interested in attending to do so as soon as possible.
Thank you, Anna, for reminding all of us to register. In fact, I just registered last night, and I'm really excited to come aboard. To our audiences here today, please continue to check out Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp for the posts that our social media team has been collecting from all around the country. And on both Instagram and Facebook, you can search for and follow Sci Women's Conference 2019 to see these posts and all the other exciting announcements that we want to share with you with regard to the Sci Women's Conference.
Dr. Horn, thank you again so much for being here today. It was a pleasure to speak with you and to listen to all of your stories and wisdom that you shared. It was really a beautiful experience. And thank you to everyone who tuned in as well. Sairam and good night.
Sairam.
Sairam, everyone. And that's a wrap to episode 3 of SciCast. And see you all at the Sci Women's Conference 2019.